Hello, and welcome to History on the Bright Side. Your daily dose of all things good from the past and sometimes the present. Because however dark it is, you can always find light somewhere. Hello, and welcome to History on the Bright Side. Today, I'm doing something a little bit different. I know typically on this cast, you just get to hear my lovely voice. But today, I brought in an expert who's actually a former student of mine. So sitting to my right is Elizabeth. How are you, Elizabeth?
Good. How are you?
Doing good. It is great to see you again.
It's great to see you, too.
I brought in Elizabeth today because of a project she did for National History Day, which is an event where you have to do a lot of research about some historical topic or another. And you present that in a variety of fashions. She chose to do what's called a display. And man, her topic was so interesting to me personally and so inspiring to me that I wanted to talk about it, and I thought there'd be no better person to bring in and be my expert than her. So, Elizabeth, why don't you tell us who we're talking about today?
We're talking about Dennis Avey. He was a former British soldier. He was captured and went into a camp that was near Monowitz, which is Auschwitz III. And he saw things that were happening over in Auschwitz and wanted to see all the rumors that he heard, if all the rumors he heard were true.
Okay, so we've got, and I don't remember this. Is he in the army? Is he a pilot? What is it that he does in the British military?
He was in the army.
Okay. So probably most people don't know that what we call Auschwitz is this giant monstrosity, you know, factory. They make things there. Obviously, they have the death camp there, but there's lots of other things kind of interconnected to that. And so when he's captured, however it happens, he ends up there. Now, who is with him at the part of the camp he is with? Because he's not just in amongst all the Jews like we typically think of. So who's he with in this camp when he's captured?
He's with all of the other people that were captured by the Germans in this camp. Most of them were captured in Africa.
Okay.
While they were fighting.
So the Germans did, the Nazis, they kept military prisoners separate, with one exception that they treated Russian prisoners quite different than they did other Allied prisoners. So even though Mr. Avey's in Auschwitz, comparatively, he's treated pretty decently. They treat the prisoners of war from the Allies, other than the Russians, much better than you would think of considering it's Auschwitz, right?
Yes. On their free days, they would actually play football and soccer. So.
Yeah. Okay. Definitely you don't think of, hey, we're prisoners of the Nazis. Let's go play a little ball. Okay. So there's this huge distinction in the way people are treated. Now, how, from his part of the camp, does Dennis Avey even become aware of the plight of the Jews? They're housed somewhere else. It's not like they're next door neighbors. How does he even become aware of what's going on in the Jewish part of the camp?
Well, they would work along right next to each other across a fence, and he would see Jews being beaten and mistreated. And he also heard a lot of rumors about what was happening over in Auschwitz.
Okay, so as much as we talk about, you know, the Jews at Auschwitz end up there at the selection ramp, and the vast majority of end up dead within an hour or two, which is true, there is a huge work component. I mean, the Nazis didn't just murder Jews. They would work them to death to support some of their industry they needed for the war. And it sounds like these British prisoners of war, they are also expected to work while they're at the camp.
Yes, they would make Buna, a type of synthetic rubber.
Okay. Now, did the Jewish prisoners who worked, and the British prisoners who work in the same things or in the same areas.
Yes.
Okay. And this is how Dennis becomes personally aware of the Jews there at the camp.
Yeah.
Now, what happens next is the whole point of this story. It's crazy, it's unbelievable, and it's just hard to fathom that anybody would A, think of this, and B, actually pull it off. So, Elizabeth, why don't you tell us what Dennis does? He's there, he's imprisoned, he hears kind of what's going on the Jewish side, he sees them from time to time when they're on their work details. What happens next?
He decides to switch places with a Dutch prisoner named Hans. They have people helping them on both sides to try to fit in and get used to the environment on each camp. And they go into a hut and they switch their uniforms. Dennis shaves his head. And they were already skinny, so not many people noticed the difference between Dennis and Hans.
Okay. So, interesting that the prisoners of war still had their haircuts or looked like they were when they were captured, it sounds like. I'm assuming they wore some type of uniform. We're pretty aware that on the Jewish side you're wearing, you know, what we call the striped pajamas. That's all what the uniform was for them. In your research, did you come across kind of how the prisoners of war dressed?
No.
Okay. So we're not sure what that was, but we know it was different, or they wouldn't have had to switch clothes.
Yes.
So clearly there's some other physical distinction between these two types of prisoners.
Yes.
Now, Hans, you say he's Dutch, so did he speak English? How did Dennis and Hans communicate? How did they even put this plan together?
Well, Dennis, you knew a little bit of Hans's language.
Okay.
And so they would try to communicate the best they could.
All right, and so they have this plan. They're going to switch places. Now, does Dennis know what's happening? What does he think he's getting into at this point?
Well, he knows they're killing the Jews, and he kind of wants to know, like, who's responsible for mistreating all these people at this certain part of the camp of Auschwitz.
Okay, so he's aware, he's got to be aware. If they get caught, he's a goner, right?
Yes.
Is there a point in his, you know, in the book where he talks about that? Is that a conscious choice that he knows if this goes awry, it's not just him that's going to be killed, it's going to be him and Hans and probably anybody who helped him, right?
Yes. He's aware of the risk he's taking.
All right. So what happens next?
Well, they switch places for 2 days, and then during one of those 2 days, he sees a Jewish being beat by a British soldier, by a Nazi, and he decides to stand up for the Jew.
Oh!
And the Nazi put his gun towards Dennis's eye and shot him, and so he now has... He had a glass eye during one of those events that happened. Then after that, they switch back, and Dennis is like, you know what, I'm going to explore a little bit more of what's Auschwitz. So they decide to switch back again, and he also met a guy named Ernest, okay? And he would help Ernest. This was a little before he traded places with Hans, but he would help Ernest by smuggling him cigarettes and chocolate to use as currency. So he would And the chocolates were sent by his Ernest's sister, who had escaped before the war.
Okay. And in Auschwitz and other camps, you're not fed enough to live. If you don't have some sort of trade, some sort of way to get extra, you're just going to starve to death slowly. So when he's making these trades, Dennis, is he aware that he's basically helping give life to someone?
Yes.
Wow. So he ends up here, and he makes choices that put his own life at risk repeatedly.
Yeah.
He helps out people with food. He makes the switch to become, I guess, a firsthand witness of what's going on. Now, when the Nazi guard, when they had switched, did he get shot or did he get, like, hit in the head with the gun? How did he...
They shot him.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It was hard for Dennis to lose an eye.
Did he talk at all about when he gets back with the prisoners of war? How do you deal with that? It's kind of hard to get hide. I got shot in the eye. It seemed like that would be, you know, that would just blow your cover, ruin the whole thing. Did he talk about that at all?
He tried to keep it more of a secret to himself so nobody would suspect that he had switched places with Hans, because he'd be putting his own life in danger along with anyone that helped and Hans.
Okay, now Dennis survives the war. Obviously, he wrote a book, so he makes it out of there. Do any of those people, Ernest, Hans, do we know if any of those people survived the war?
Ernest, he survived, and he went on to tell his story also.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he survived the death marches.
Okay. Did they ever get back together after the war? Did they ever get a chance to re-meet?
No. Dennis thought that Ernest had died.
Right.
So he didn't know until he went to talk to Ernest's sister, who told him he was alive, but he was in America at the time.
Uh-huh.
So they never got reunited, but...
That would have been... I can't even imagine what that would be like. I mean, anytime you go through a shared tragedy together, it builds some kind of bond. I can't even imagine what that would have been like if they would have had the chance to just see each other again. That's incredible. Now, after the war, so is Dennis kind of talking about these things right away? A lot of people who dealt with anything with the Holocaust really just kind of sat on it and didn't talk about it. What does Dennis do after the war?
Well, he escaped during the death marches also.
Okay.
And he ended up, I can't remember where, but he got sick, so he had to spend a year in the hospital.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and so after he got out of the hospital, he went to tell authorities what had happened, but no one believed him.
They thought
he was crazy.
Well, I mean, did they think he was crazy, or did they think he was, like, lying or self-promoting?
I think a little bit of both.
It's an unbelievable story.
Yeah.
Because who would do that, and how on earth would you get away with it? What do you feel like, having done this research? I mean, what does this story, what does Dennis Avey and his plight, what does that mean to you personally?
I feel like it means to me, like, how we should always help people, other people that are in need, no matter, even if sometimes we're risking our own lives, and to be extra cautious when we're doing this, because it can affect you and the other people around you.
So you found some inspiration.
Yes.
From his story. Well, I do too. You know, I've studied World War II and the Holocaust a ton, and most of it's just black and dark and almost hopeless. And I think it's dangerous to find these little stories and these little nuggets and go, oh, see, I don't want to make it sound like the Holocaust was worth it because we have these weird inspirational moments. But it matters to me personally that in the worst of human circumstances, when we're surrounded by the worst that humanity can be, and I don't know how you get any worse than Auschwitz, Even there, we find people who make choices to do great things, to do hard things, and to do selfless things for others. Ultimately, I feel like that's what humanity can be, that that's the high point of human existence. And Dennis Avery and his story definitely inspire me to that. Do you have any closing thoughts for the listeners, Elizabeth?
No.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming in and sharing the story. It means also a lot to me that, I mean, you're a young person. You probably never would have heard of this otherwise if you hadn't had this project. So in a way, when you do that research and when you tell this story, you're keeping that incredibly inspirational story alive. You're helping to give that more life. And I applaud you for doing that. So thank you, and we'll talk to you next time on History on the Bright Side.